that word, some of you may have never heard before until just now, is now actually in the Oxford English Dictionary. They've traced it back, as far as we can tell, to the year 2000. It was actually invented by a marketing firm, the word actually was. But now it has become so commonplace through just conversation and social media and everything else that FOMO is actually a word in the Oxford English Dictionary. If you don't know what it means, it's the fear of missing out. F-O-M-O. And because of the fact that we can scroll through social media and we can see that our friends are all on a big vacation and we're at home in our sweatpants watching Full House reruns. But now that's your choice. That's a good choice, by the way. But we see what they're doing. We see the things that they're getting to enjoy. Or everybody else is being invited to something and I haven't been invited yet. Or everybody else is experiencing something and I haven't been experiencing yet. There actually can become an anxiety that builds up within us because we have FOMO. We have a fear of missing out. In fact, one psychotherapist, Shava Rajay, described FOMO this way. She wrote, "The fear of missing out is an experience of anxiety at the thought of not being included in an event, not being in the know, and a sense of, or fear of, not living one's best life." But tonight, we're not thinking about FOMO. You may have seen the title in this week's bulletin and thought, Adam's speaking in tongues or something because he's writing nothing but letters all over the place. The title of tonight's lesson is not F-O-M-O. The title of tonight's lesson is F-O-E-M-O. I want us to think about the fear of eternally missing out. And I want you to turn your Bibles to the very, very back, just before the maps. We're going to be in Revelation chapter 20 and Revelation chapter 21 in just a couple of moments. Because I want us to think about this concept from not just a couple of angles, but really from a couple of eternal angles. Yes, this lesson is meant to be motivational. But it's also meant to be really, really serious because more is at stake here than just missing out on a good day or a good season of life or some party or something that other people know that I don't know. Eternity hangs in the balance. My soul's destiny hangs in the balance. I want us to think about tonight a couple of very serious things from these texts and see if there isn't something that we can miss out on eternally and the fear that that should cause us to have, but also the motivation we should gain from that. Number one tonight, I want us to consider where fear will be unending. I want you to begin reading with me in Revelation chapter 20, verse 11, and we'll read through the end of that chapter. Revelation 20, beginning of verse 11. "Then I saw a great white throne, and him who was seated on it. From his presence, earth and sky fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, small and great and small, standing before the throne. And books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books according to what they had done. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire." And here's the key verse. "And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." That scene that begins to unfold in Revelation 20 and verse 11 is, of course, that judgment scene at the end of time. And we could spend a lesson or two or more just on those handful of verses. But I wanted to read all five verses from that text tonight to remind us of the context going on, but also the key thought in the middle of that paragraph, that each of us will stand before God and be judged for what we have individually done. But verse 15, the last one we read, should ring in our ears any time that we are tempted to do things that we know are wrong, or any time we are tempted to shirk our responsibility of doing what we know is right, to take a stand for the truth and do what's right. "And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." And by describing that as the lake of fire, there's no question that the picture is that of hell. Our world doesn't want to talk about that. Some people think that it's just not real. Some people think it's just not going to be all that bad. And of course, our culture has made hell into and Satan into nothing more than a Halloween costume or even a cartoon character. But the Bible consistently talks about the subject. but it also describes them in ways that are so awful that we really cannot use words to get our minds around what it is, how awful it is. And I can't wrap my mind around it all. But I want us to notice that some of the descriptions found in Scripture of that place are meant to instill within us a fear of going there. Obviously, you could think of the pictures of fire and darkness. I have no earthly idea how you can possibly have a place where there is fire and darkness. But for certain, two of the things people fear the most are fire and darkness. And I believe, obviously, hell is being described there literally in those ways. But for certain, it helps us to see that it is a place that causes that fear of the pain and the darkness and those sorts of things, but it's more than that. Because in addition to those horrible images, hell also is everlasting. We love to talk about heaven being a place that will go on and on. We just sing about that. I love that song we just got through singing. We love to talk about it being that unending day. But the Bible uses that same terminology to describe the place and the punishment in hell. Many of you know as well as I do that there are a lot of people teaching now that hell as a place may last forever, but those who are there will not. They say that after some period of time, whatever it might be, we don't know, but after some period of time, those who are in hell will simply cease to exist. The fancy terminology is annihilationism, because after a time, the teaching says that those who are there will be annihilated. They will go out of existence. But the Bible doesn't teach any such thing. In fact, it teaches the exact opposite. Because hell is a place of everlasting torment, and it's also a place of no hope. You've probably heard it said before, that if I knew that after 1,000 years, or 1,000,000 years, or 10 billion years there, that I was simply going to cease to exist, that would at least be some level of hope. But there is no hope there. The same terminology used to describe heaven as everlasting is also used to describe hell as not just as a place, but the punishment of it. So you have that fear. But you also have the fear of who else will be there. Of course, the devil will be there. He has spent his time trying to get you from heaven, and maybe now he succeeded. Do you really want to spend eternity with him and with his demons? Every horrible sinner will be there. Murderers, liars, thieves, whatever you want to put on the list, whatever you might think of as the worst, do I want to be there for all eternity with them? People filled with regret will be there. You might think of Luke chapter 16. The rich man is told of the advantages he had while he was living. If that's meant to picture some of the realities on the other side, can you imagine the wailing and the pain and the regret that people have for all eternity because of what they failed to do or what they did but they knew they shouldn't have? Those who had responsibilities, those who knew they could have done better and didn't. The parents who didn't put God first in their homes. The men who hid an affair their entire lives. The teenagers who snuck around and sent dirty jokes on social media. The businessmen and businesswomen who pilfered, oh, just a little from the bottom line. The gambler who said he would quit but didn't. There should be fear when we think about who else will be there. But also there should be a fear because of, if we're there, our own regret and our own pain. For the individual who's in hell in that place of darkness but hearing that wailing, that gnashing of teeth, that pain, it also somehow leaves us alone with our own thoughts to remember what we could have done, what I could have done. The fear of that mental anguish, if you will, should be enough. But above all of those, the ultimate fear is that hell will be the place where God chooses not to be. You can think of whoever you might think is the worst person in the history of the world. I won't name names, but you might put a picture in your mind of whoever you think is the worst person who has ever lived, the most evil human being who's ever walked the face of the earth. And whoever you might think that is, even that person, for his or her entire life, did not know here on the earth what it was like to be apart from certain blessings of God. Did Jesus not Himself say that God causes the rain and the sun to fall or to come for both the evil and the good? God sends certain blessings simply because we are walking on the face of the earth. The worst person who has ever lived breathed because God gave that person air and gave that person the physical capacity to take in air and to make sure those processes happen in their life. The most evil person who has ever lived was able to enjoy a glass of water at some point on this earth because God gave the water and because God gave them the ability to take in that water, to feel the taste and the coolness of that drink of water, and all those simple blessings that we often take for granted. The worst person who has ever lived knows those. But when any person dies and is lost forever, they will no longer know the blessing of the presence of God. They will somehow know what it's like to not have God present. And in reality, all of that is summarized in Matthew chapter 25, because after reminding us about helping others and showing them the light, feeding the hungry, visiting the lonely, all of that, and Jesus gives that judgment scene, Jesus talks about the punishment of those who don't do that. And their punishment is given in Matthew 25 and verse 41 when he says, "Then he will say to those on his left, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels.'" In that one statement that Jesus gives, he makes it clear, Jesus does, that hell is at least three things. First, it's a place of eternal separation. Depart from me. I never want to hear those words. From the one who died for me and for the one who has done everything so that I don't have to hear those words. But if those are the words that are given, there'll be permanent. It will be eternal separation. But also, it's a place of awful sensation. Eternal fire. The pain and agony of hell are unimaginable. But they're also unending. And third, it's a place of terrible association. The devil and his angels. One thing we must keep in mind is that it's prepared for them. Really, hell was not prepared for people. It was designed for the devil and his angels, according to this verse, but those who are lost will still go there and will have to go to a place prepared for the devil and his angels and spend all time with them, if you please, in association with them. So with all that said, yes, we should fear going there. But we also should realize that hell is a place that's going to be filled with fear because we can't know how awful it is. There's no way in one lesson or a series of lessons or really in a lifetime that we could do justice to what it will be like. But just those few thoughts should be enough to remind us of how awful it is and will be and how we should fear anything that would cause us to go there. But aren't you glad that Revelation doesn't end there? Yes, there's that horrible picture. But Revelation does not just end with the place that's filled with fear. Revelation also, in the second place, shows us what we should fear missing out on. Revelation 21, read with me the first four verses. "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He, God, will dwell with them, and they will be His, God's people. And God Himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away.'" I love looking at that text from the positive side of it. But we titled tonight's lesson, FOEMO. Ever consider the fact that right after this text of what the lake of fire is, you have this passage that shows us if someone is in hell, this is what they're missing out on. One, something, some place that's always new. I cannot get my mind around the concept of what's meant in this vision of Revelation as it describes a new heaven and a new earth. There are a lot of people who are a whole lot smarter than me who have debates and books and all sorts of things about what exactly that means. I can't grasp everything about that. I know what I think about it, but I can't grasp it. But I can understand this. By describing it as new, we're being told that nothing there ever grows old, even in the least. It is not only new at the start, it's always new. We see the effects of time, we see the effects of aging on this earth all the time. Those factors are not in heaven. And so we never have to worry about things that occur to us, that wear things down, that cause things to age or to wear out. Just as glorious and new as heaven is or will be on moment one, it will be just that glorious and just that new 10 billion years after we've been ushered in. And even that isn't an accurate statement because there's no time there. A year after you buy a brand new car. Okay, a year after you buy a car. Most of us can't buy brand new cars. But a year after you buy a car, You've already had to have it repaired, probably. If at the least, you've probably had to change the oil or maybe even put some newer tires on it so it doesn't wear out. Nothing like that exists in heaven. It's always brand new. Who would want to miss that for eternity? Two, something that's always beautiful. A bride as a bride adorned for her husband. What a beautiful phrase. Even if you're not married, you get the picture. Every detail is just right for this moment. Because so much preparation and so much care has been come into not just this day, but this moment when the bride, in our culture, when the bride appears maybe at the back door or before the judge or wherever it happens to be, in whatever culture it is, maybe it's a curtain that's pulled back and she appears, everything is brought together for that one moment where she looks just right to present herself, as it were, to her husband. Heaven is that to the infinite degree. Jesus said that He has gone to prepare dwelling places there, John chapter 14. And if He has been doing that, for as we count time, all these centuries, two millennia, what must it look like? Sometimes your friends share pictures of beautiful places online. Maybe they've traveled more than you do, or maybe they just have gone somewhere you haven't gone yet. Do you sometimes feel maybe a little left out because you've never quite seen that place? You've never quite seen that location or that beautiful that river or that oceanside or that mountain. No matter how much you may feel like you've missed out on something here, nothing that anybody could ever take a picture of on this earth will compare to how beautiful heaven is. That's why John describes it as a place with streets of gold, gates of pearl. Those things aren't literal, we know that. But the best he could do to describe the awesome beauty he saw in this vision of that place, I think we sing words that are absolutely true, but they're also some of the biggest understatement words we sing when we sing, "How beautiful heaven must be." We can't even possibly put into words how true that statement is. Who would ever want to miss that for eternity? Three, we would miss the nearby presence of God. As we mentioned, in hell, people are away from the presence of God. But contrasted with that, Revelation pictures God being right there with His people and dwelling with them and they with Him. Jesus went to prepare it, John 14 again. But in that preparation, He's making mansions, rooms, dwelling places, whatever the word actually means, because heaven is the household of God. It's almost as if those who are there have their own guest wing and the most amazing mansion in all of creation. But more than a mansion or a room or a dwelling place, to finally see God and to know that we will be dwelling right with Him forever. What a thought. We've never beheld Him face to face. We know He's real because of the evidence we have all around us. But in eternity, we'll be right with Him. I know Peter was talking about Jesus when he said that though we have not seen Him, we love Him. But can the same not be true of God the Father? An old song put it so very well. Oh, I want to see Him. Look upon His face. There to sing forever of His saving grace. But more than just seeing Him, we will dwell with Him and He with us. I love that both sides of that picture are there. Heaven is a place, but it's a place of connectedness. We are right with God forever. Who would want to miss that? For eternity. For everlasting comfort. He will wipe away every tear. And heaven is also described in these verses as a place where there's no mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, and no crying. We have so many things in this life that cause us to cry, or at least to have those sorrowful emotions, even if they don't move us to the point of tears. Our hearts, as we sometimes say, are heavy at times. We hurt for people who struggle. We cry at bad news. We cry at loss. But in heaven, none of that is there. But more than that, there's nothing in heaven that could ever cause us to mourn or to cry. You won't get that phone call that causes you to sink into your couch or fall to your knees in tears. You won't have someone say words to you that cut you so deeply that tears well up in your eyes as you try to hold on to your emotions. You won't have to try to be the one who's holding it together at a funeral, or who's trying to hold it together on someone's bedside as they writhe in pain. Who would want to miss that for eternity? Five, everlasting togetherness. There is no more death in heaven. As you know, death just means a separation. But heaven is a place where none of that ever occurs again. You may have heard me say this before. I don't know. I've said it several different places. But there are a lot of words that we say here in this life that I don't know if we'll speak English in heaven or not. I don't know what language we're going to speak there, but I presume we'll say something similar to those same words in heaven. I have to think that we'll communicate very similarly than we do here. But one word that we say almost every day, if not every day, that I don't believe we will ever say once in heaven is goodbye. When you've had to stand by a grave or visit a funeral home and realize this will probably be the last time you touch someone's hand or hear that voice again, it should make us ache for heaven. And it's really more than just knowing that we'll see someone again. It's really more than that. Maybe a parent, a spouse, a child, a dear friend. It's really knowing that we will see that person again and never have to leave again. And that will be the case with all the redeemed of all the ages. We will only be around the faithful forever and ever and ever and never have to leave. Who would want to miss that? For eternity. And six, everlasting health. There is no pain in heaven. If I understand passages like 1 Corinthians 15 correctly, our bodies in heaven will be glorified bodies. We'll still be ourselves. I'll still be me. You'll still be you. But our bodies will be glorified. They won't be subject to things like disease or decay. I don't know exactly how that works, but I believe the Bible makes that clear. But no pain in heaven means there's nothing there that could cause us to be hurt. You won't have to go to dialysis in heaven. You'll never make a hospital visit. There are no urgent care clinics on the streets of gold. There's no arthritis. There's no cancer. Folks, you won't even so much as skin your knee. Every time you get a cough and have to take medicine even for that, it's to remind us that we're not in heaven yet because not even anything like that is there. It's a place where nothing that even causes pain exists. Who would ever want to miss that for eternity? When you boil down the contrast from the end of Revelation 20 and the beginning of Revelation 21, it really is given to us as a fact. Here is what will happen to those who are in the lake of fire. Here is what it will be like for those who are not. But in reality, what you really have is a choice. But it's an easy choice, or it should be. We can choose to go to a place that's filled with fear for all eternity. We can go to the place that's better than anything we've ever dreamed about. But I want to make one thought as we extend the Lord's invitation. You may have noticed as we were reminded of heaven from that passage in Revelation 21 that each time at the end of those six things I said, who would want to miss that for eternity? But in reality, there's another way to think about it. If we miss heaven, yes, it will be for eternity, for everlasting. There's no doubt about that. Just as long as heaven lasts, hell lasts. That's true. But in this world, we have FOMO, the fear of missing out. Things like parties and vacations and the latest news. Maybe, just maybe, we have so much FOMO here on this earth that we will miss heaven for this world. I don't want to miss heaven for anything. Isn't it time to put our thoughts on heaven first and to make certain that we don't think so much of this world that we miss the eternal blessings that God has prepared for those in Revelation 21 who get to be with Him, dwell with Him, and know the glories of heaven forever, forever, and forever. The same God who told us this is our choice has also told us how to make sure our choice is right. If you have never put your faith in Jesus, if you have never repented of sins, If you have never confessed the sweet name of Jesus as your Lord and Savior, if you have never been immersed, baptized in water for the forgiveness of sins, let your mind think about that contrast. Realize what you're missing out on. If you have, something's gotten in your way. Why would you want to miss out for something in this world? Who will come as we stand and as we sit?